Football Friday is here. It's time for Cofield & Company, live from the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas.
Go to the locker room. Great game. Go to the locker, please.
It's all in trash talk, man. You know, it's all about being the best.
This is how we do it.
It's time for Cofield & Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
Here we go on a Friday, live, local. Another nice day, another nice day. Golden Nugget is the scene. We're going to have people yelling at us as if we're game day all day long here down at Golden Nugget.
Her underwear is hanging out.
Yeah, some healthy tookuses walking around, coming from the pool. Always like to see that. Adam Hill is here. That's the voice of Mark McMillan. We got a big hour number one on the way. Tons of Raider talk about Thursday Night Football coming up. We'll roll through all the highlights, get Mark's opinion, Adam's opinion of what happened down the stretch. Adam was actually up at the Coliseum, and we're hoping to track down the one, the only, Rod Woodson, who was on the call of the game. I think he was. Maybe it was Monday night. But anyway, Rod Woodson, Raiders legend, will be joining us in about 25 minutes. Let's do it.
It's time for The Three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
I wanted to start on something that's not exactly game-related, but it involves one of the teams in the game, the Chargers. Adam, you saw that someone else is backing up Vinny B, the reporter who put out that the Chargers are being discussed in NFL circles as a team that they could move. Now, Steve Wyche, I don't even know if he's with the NFL Network anymore, but longtime NFL reporter, is saying he's heard the same thing.
Yeah, he said he hadn't heard the London thing, but he's absolutely heard talk that they don't believe LA is a viable market for the Chargers, and they're trying to figure out what to do. And I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. We've been kind of talking about this for weeks.
It's a surprise to someone who was cussing out the media early in the week.
No, it wasn't.
You don't think so?
No.
What was Dean Spanos doing? Putting on a show?
Yep. 100%.
So explain that first before you get to Wyche.
I believe he absolutely knew the story was coming out. I believe he absolutely knew the story was true. And I believe that he was kind of setting this up to say, hey, look, LA, I'm fighting for you guys. I don't believe it was genuine at all.
Okay. So what's going on here? So he's in the loop on discussions. They're trying to find an exit plan to get them the hell out of LA?
Well, I feel that Spanos wants to be in LA and wants to figure out a way to make it happen, and I think that's part of why he's putting on this facade of, hey, LA, look, I'm fighting for you. Are you gonna love me now that I'm fighting for you? I think it was all kind of orchestrated by him, so I didn't believe any of that. As far as what the NFL wants to do, I believe the NFL wants to get the Chargers out of it. I believe they want to figure out a way to move them somewhere else. Ideally, I think they never would have had them leave San Diego. They would have got a new stadium. San Diego never got them a new stadium. And so, you know, Spanos, I don't think, is ever going to put up the money to do the stadium. I don't know that he has the money to build a stadium. So I think they were left in a tough spot of not really knowing what to do with this team. They ended up giving them L.A. I don't think they want it to happen. I think you look at the crowds every week, and it's not good for the NFL to have a team that has zero crowd support. And now what are they going to do with an even bigger stadium? So I think the NFL wants them out. The Chargers want to stay, and they're trying to figure out the best possible compromise for everybody to be at least somewhat happy.
What do you think of that whole story, Mark? What do you think is going to happen? They're going to land in L.A., or they're going to stay in L.A., move a little bit north next year, or is the exit plan a real story here, and they're going to find them either back in San Diego, London, or I don't know where the hell else they're going to go?
I get a lot of feedback from people in San Diego. You know, I see Marshall Faulk tweeting out. I see Marcus Allen. Eric Allen, the guys that are from San Diego, that are, you know, those guys grew up Charger fans. And, you know, they want the Chargers back. You know, for those guys to step up and say they want the Chargers back in San Diego, that says a lot about those guys. And they weren't even Chargers. But San Diego needs a team. You can't play in Carson in a soccer stadium and just think that you're going to –
It's stupid.
It's crazy. They don't even play high school games there anymore. You know, that's how bad it is. And then you put an NFL franchise with – you know, it's a historical franchise. I said this early in the week. You know, they got some really good players that came through that organization, Hall of Fame players. And now, you know, you recognize them at halftime in a soccer stadium. And that's embarrassing for the NFL.
Yeah, but here's the thing. San Diego's screwed because I've said it 5,000 times now – the NFL should lend the money to Spanos or just build the stadium outright, come up with some kind of plan. They have the money. It has the money, but two things happen. Kroenke paid for his own stadium, and then we came over the top. We completely screwed the pooch by giving the NFL the greatest deal in history for a stadium, so now that's the expectation. What do you think, they're going to change things to help out San Diego and help out Spanos? That ain't going to help, or that ain't going to happen.
No. No, I think they're in a really, really tough predicament.
And by the way, good luck finding another state like ours to give you $2 billion.
Oh, which, by
the end of it, it's going to be like 2.7.
No, but I've heard that, that this new shiny stadium down over across from Mandalay Bay is going to have two teams, which that's interesting.
Wow.
That would be very interesting.
That's a good. I never heard that one yet.
Well, Spanos does have tons of property in Las Vegas. I know, building a super expensive house/condo up on the west side of town in the hills in Summerlin. It's nowhere near being done, but he's a guy who likes Vegas.
Yeah, but again, I think all these things are just kind of floated out there in different areas to like, hey, what can happen with this team? Where could they go? Who's going to step up and do something? I think all these things are just kind of being floated out there.
Well, what we saw last night was amazing. Think about, and I'm talking about the crowd, think about the fact that San Diego, well, frankly, I don't think the fans didn't want the Chargers. They don't want to pay for a stadium, right? A team leaves San Diego. A team is going to leave Oakland. They've got, starting last night, what, 3 home games left? Is that right? No, 4. Am I right on that? Yeah, because they have Jags, Titans, Jags to close.
Bengals,
so that was the 4th in the countdown.
Yeah.
They only got 3 games left after this, and that crowd was boffo, right? I mean, it absolutely made a difference down the stretch, and especially on that key drive where the Chargers got down to about the 6-yard line, were about to, if they could score freaking touchdowns, were about to go up 21-20 because they were down 20-14, and the Chargers made some mistakes, didn't execute, but they also got to delay a game because the crowd was roaring.
Yeah, and I thought it was very interesting that the Sunday crowd this past week really wasn't that overwhelming. Against the Lions. I thought it was there was a lot of empty seats. I don't think there was a lot of energy and enthusiasm. I thought after so long away and after that road trip was over, it was going to be kind of crazy, and it just wasn't. And I chalked that up to, well, team's leaving. They've been gone for too long, out of sight, out of mind. But for whatever reason, and I think a lot of it had to do with the prime time game, a lot of it had to do with the Chargers being there, yesterday was the best crowd that I've seen covering the team up there. And it was really impressive. And listen, the defensive line of the Raiders had by far their best performance. They got pressure consistently. They made plays. They were impactful. And listen, part of that is the Chargers' offensive line. It's one of the worst units of any kind I've seen in football in a long time.
It also hasn't helped that they lost Feeney. And last night, Okung was in there, and then Phillip Rivers throws an interception.
Forrest Lamp's been out all year.
And Forrest Lamp went out, so.
So, I mean, of course. But what they put on the field last night was atrocious. The Raiders took advantage. But talking to some of the guys in the locker room afterwards, they were saying that they really felt it. Like, they were really getting advantage. The Chargers were having a hard time making calls at the line. They were having a hard time with their snap count. They really felt it. So I feel like that was, you know, That was a big factor yesterday in that performance.
Let's listen to the very end of the game, because if you want to hear crowd noise, now this call is a really good call. The quality, I don't know what was going on last night. I think they had to do it on a phone line or something. But you can hear the crowd. This is the Raiders' side of that final interception that sealed the game. Rivers throws downfield. Carl Joseph, Johnny on the spot.
And he is going to throw on this down. Fires high. Intercepted again. Picked off. Return to the 40. Down the sideline. 29 on. Here comes Eric Harris. Going in all the way. Touchdown, Raiders. There is a penalty flag, however, back at the 40-yard line. But Eric Harris with his second interception of the night.
There's no foul for a low block on the quarterback.
Touchdown, Raiders, baby.
No foul.
Oops, I jumped the gun. That was actually the early pick six by Eric Harris. Now, here's the other side. Listen to the Chargers call, and you can already see that Matt Money Smith is like, boy, oh, boy, this is going to be a rough night for Phillip Rivers.
Takes the shotgun snap, looking left, still looking left, and we got a slip on the field in the second interception. There is a flag down at the line of scrimmage. This could be returned for a touchdown, and as it stands, it's a pick six. It'll be a 55-yard interception return for a touchdown. Let's get the flag
here. There's no foul for a low block on the quarterback.
The defender was blocked into the quarterback. There's no foul.
So what a start. Phillip Rivers' second interception, and just like that, the Raiders are up 9-0.
Evan, they eventually go up 10-0. My God, Rivers was not good last night. As you mentioned, the defensive line was in his face. I want to talk about coverage in a couple of minutes because we'll get to the final drive. Mark McMillan's here. It's Adam Hill. It's Cofield. Golden Nugget on a Friday. We'll continue to go through the highlights for the Raiders. Big victory. 5-4 now as they take out the Chargers in dramatic fashion.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600.
On first down, here's another pick, and that's Harris again. Down the sideline, a flag is down in the middle of the field, and Harris is into the end zone.
Now, back to the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas, for Football Friday on Cofield & Company.
There you go. We got all three calls, right? Your little Chargers call a few minutes ago, the Musburger call on Compass Media, and also Joe Buck off of TV. That was a big one early in the game. Made it Raiders 10-0. So I want to roll through some more highlights. We'll kind of break them down here with Mark McMillan and Adam Hill. Adam was in Oakland as the Raiders win 26-24. They're now 5-4. We're going to get into possible prop opportunities out there. Raiders make the playoff. Yes, no, that's coming up in a little bit. We got Rod Woodson here in about 15 minutes. All right, let's fire through some more highlights, and we'll break down what was going on throughout the game. Keep going.
Carr, roll to throw, and there's a penalty flag, diving for the end zone, touchdown pending the penalty. Alec Ingold, the receiver, but the Chargers are pointing.
The Chargers are offside.
Against.
Offside, number 71, defense was lined up in the neutral zone. That penalty is declined, the result of the play. Touchdown.
By the way, when our vast sound crew was pulling all these cuts, was there a penalty on every touchdown? How many penalties? How many flags were thrown in the game?
A lot. That game took forever. There was penalties on every play, and then there was actually penalties on plays that they didn't call. And you're like, wait, you've called all these other penalties. You're not calling this one? That's really what drives me nuts. I know people don't like penalties, but I don't like when you're calling all these penalties and you see an obvious one, and the ref decides like, yeah, I'm not going to call it this time. And when we talk, fans were getting so mad, booing and like, another penalty. Yeah, Cleveland froze lining up off sides every time. What do you want him to do, not call it?
Mark, why does that happen? How can that happen that many times when a defensive end is off sides?
That's just lack of discipline. You know, obviously, you're the closest to the ball, and you're looking down the line of scrimmage. You know, one time, okay, you may be trying to get a little jump off the ball, but time after time, the film room got to be throwing chalkboards. They got to be throwing all kind of stuff at the film board because he could have cost them a game, you know, with those penalties.
Adam, maybe it was by design. He's like, I'll be offside 15 times. I'll get, you know, 2.5 sacks. They can only call it so many times.
Maybe that's my philosophy on some other penalties.
Kind of worked.
He rolled the dice. Yeah, he rolled the dice.
What is Alec Ingold?
What is he?
Yeah.
A fullback?
I'm just kind of playing. I'm doing the play, you know, our old play. Like, this person calls itself. Like, what is going on here?
He's been really good, but yeah. I believe he's now 5-for-5 on 4th-and-1s.
Wow.
Which, I mean, I don't know, read a scouting report defense. That's what they're going to do on 4th-and-1. But then yesterday he gets his first target of the year and goes 9 yards for a touchdown. So, wow. You know, good for him.
Yeah. More highlights from the game. Keep going.
I am a little bit surprised they're not going on 4th-and-2 here. I got the Charger 35-yard line. I'm a little bit surprised. Let's see if he's going to go through with Daniel Carlson.
53-yard attempt.
Be his career long. No good.
I thought they could probably try to get that first down like you.
If you play the numbers game, strictly the numbers, a successful field goal would have put him up 9. If you play in the numbers. If you're playing the situation and you know where the ball is, then you want to go for it on 4th-and-2. That would be my feeling on that situation.
Man, that is one of the things we discuss every week, Adam and Mark, is this propensity for coaches to continue to try to kick just bombs and also settle inside the 10. We'll get to Anthony Lynn in a couple of minutes, but that was a costly call by John Gruden.
It was, and I think we need to get away from like traditional nomenclature about these things. Like, when all the time you're like, oh, you're going to play it safe and kick the field goal. No. It's actually, if you go for it, the chances are higher of making it than making the field goal in those situations. That means you're risking. You're taking a risk by kicking a field goal. We need to start changing how we talk about these things. And in this case, it's like, ah, he's going to play it safe. He's going to kick the field goal here. No, that's not the case. Playing it safe would be going for it, because that's what you're supposed to do by the percentages. That's an old-school thought process right there, for sure. Now, I know John Gruden really, really believes in Carlson. That's only, I think, the third field goal he's missed in this year and a half there. But it's really kind of on the very edge of his range.
Mm-hmm.
He's more of a 45 and in guy. There was no reason to kick that field goal.
And there are so many coaches around the league who will pick a 52, 53-yarder over going for it on fourth and two. Fourth and three, fourth
so
and four.
So many, especially older coaches. That's the old school mentality. Got to get the points. Got to get those points.
But the problem is analysis is too results-driven. So if you don't get it on fourth down, you lose the game, people are going to say, hey, you blew it. Why didn't you get the field goal there?
Yep.
And it's like, by the numbers, I should be going for it on fourth and two, three, or four.
100%.
But people can't buy that. Keep going, Ari.
The Chargers show a 9-man front against this set. The hand. Big hole. First down, end zone. Touchdown, Jacobs. Touchdown, Raiders. Would you believe it? Off the bench. The offensive line blows the hole open against that 9-man box. And Jacobs takes it home. Roll Tide, baby.
Great job by Jacobs. Did not have a big night, but, man, when he needed to make a big run or, catch something big out of the backfield, he did it.
Yeah, he made big plays, and that's something that he's done. I think that's kind of the next step in his progression of, hey, you might not get, 100 yards every game. You might not put up huge numbers, but you've got to stay with it. You've got to stay with the plan, stay with, the system that they're employing, and at some point you're going to get it. And on that play, it was really well blocked. I think this morning on the plane, I'm going to watch that play 100 times. The blocking was incredible. There was a hole. He hit the hole, but then bounced it left, just one cut out to the left, got away from the linebackers. The linebackers also took a terrible route.
Yeah,
on the play.
The safety took a terrible angle also. I looked at the play, and I was like, man, the safety's supposed to fill that gap. The safety was way late on that play, and he should have made the play. Obviously, they blocked the well up front, but the linebacker and the safety, they were supposed to fit. It was supposed to be almost like a funnel situation, and they both blew it.
So can we talk about the final drive by the Raiders?
Sure.
Because they, as people would say, matriculated, if I can say it, their way down the field with dink and dunk. What were the Chargers doing on defense? Because they allowed, Renfro a couple times, guys to just settle in the zone. And I'm watching, and I swear, like the first six plays on the drive, they keep rushing four. Will you send someone else? There's no pressure on Carr.
Yeah, I didn't get that at all. And, I was looking at the defensive backs and where they were lined up. They were lined up like 7-8 yards off these guys. Put some pressure on Carr. Make these receivers beat you. I just don't get that as a defensive coordinator, and you're in that position.
He doesn't like the blitz. But in that situation, you got to change things up. I mean, they're getting 8 yards a chunk.
Yeah, these guys get paid a lot of money. And, nowadays, these guys are getting paid a lot of money to play zone defense. I'm going to say it again, man. I think we can suit up and play zone.
I'll ask you,
can suit up. We can get one play.
Steve,
you got one in you?
I got nothing in me. But I get your point. You can.
I'll ask you, as a former defensive player, would a coordinator be hesitant to send extra pressure against a really, really good offensive line, in that if you do send the pressure and they don't get there, you're really exposing your defensive backs to a big play, where if you think the blitz is going to get there because the offensive line is vulnerable, maybe you're more likely to send it.
Well, playing under Bud Carson, we used to blitz a lot. Whether we were playing against the Cowboys, the Redskins, who all had really good offensive linemen, we just had the notion of, the ball's got to come out hot. And like I said, these guys get paid a lot of money just to cover for a few seconds. And if you can't put pressure on the guys, and you look at the New England Patriots now, they're starting to put pressure on the ball now. They're starting to blitz. They're starting to use a lot of man-to-man coverage, and they used to didn't do that. So, for the Chargers to just sit back and play almost like a prevent defense.
I could not believe it.
And pretty much they just bent over and gave the game away.
It was amazing. And it sort of set up the Chargers on offense to look like jackasses because they couldn't get down the field. We'll get to what the Raiders did on defense, but here's a couple of versions of the call. I jumped the gun a couple minutes ago, but here's the interception at the end by Carl Joseph. This is the Raiders side.
Rivers will take this snap back into the gun on the 25-yard line. Here's the snap. Backs it up. Pump fake. Going to go deep. Intercepted. It's over, baby. Over, baby. Carl Joseph's got it. The Raiders are in the chase for the playoffs.
They are in the chase for the playoffs. Listen to the Chargers side and how frustrated Matt Money Smith, who's on the Chargers radio network, was.
And now finally we see a new formation. Rivers on 4th and 10. This is the game. They rush for. Rivers lets it fly right for Keenan Allen. Intercepted. Game over. Carl Joseph intercepts it. Game over. The Raiders win.
Threw it into traffic.
Well, and I think that was really just more of the same, DJ. Every one of those throws he had on that drive was into traffic. Rivers with his third interception of the game, and you just never got the sense there was anything working on that drive.
Why wasn't anything working on the drive, Mark? Was it good defense by the Raiders? Was it defensive line pressure? Or you heard at the beginning of the call, the play-by-play guy's like, you keep running the same formation on every freaking play.
Yeah, I was wondering, too. I was like, man, this is the same formation. They're going to run a crossing route. He had the tight end and the fullback across the middle several times. For about 8 or 9 yard gain, he just chose to go in too deep coverage. You see, the safety was always over the top. And then they mix it in with a lot of man-to-man coverage. That's where they got a couple of penalties. But they were playing aggressive. They were playing to win the game. And they forced Phillip Rivers into a lot of bad throws, like he said earlier. That front four was getting after it. Those young boys were really getting after it. And I said it earlier in the week. You look at John Gruden's picks over the last couple of years, the draft from this year. All those guys that he picked up are making a big-time difference. Even Hunter Renfrow, we talked about him earlier about getting stronger and figuring it out. Now he's figuring it out. He's making big-time plays.
Yeah, third downs especially. Yeah. It's called third and Renfrow up there. Everybody talks about it, and everybody knows it's coming, and yet they're somehow able to do it. And one of the things that Derek Carr talked about this week is he had to learn about Hunter Renfrow. Hunter Renfrow is a different player. Hunter Renfrow is not a guy that runs a traditional, hey, this is your route, go run it. What you do with Hunter Renfrow is say, hey, be at that point at this time, and he figures out a way how to get there and get open, and I think they're finally learning how to use him.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. 1, 2, 3.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan.
Penalty flag on the play. Pass is caught. That's Ingold, the fullback, for the touchdown, but a flag is down.
Offside, number 71. Defense was lined up in the neutral zone. That penalty is declined. The result of the play, touchdown.
Now, back to the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas, for Football Friday on Cofield and Company.
So, update on that UNLV game tomorrow. Looks like the number will be 5, but we'll get you a number, an official number here soon. Kansas State in town, defending Big 12 champ at the Thomas and Mack to take on the Running Rebels. You hear the TV call on the way back of the Ingold touchdown. Raiders now 5-4. Let's go through a couple of the big stories in the game, Adam. First of all, Eric Harris. What a freaking night. Pick 6. What's this guy's story? He's got a weird background, right? It took him a long time to make it.
Yeah, undrafted guy, below the radar. Nobody really knew about him. He was working in some factories. He was playing
what
in
kind
Canada.
Of by the way, what kind of factory?
It was a potato chip factory, I think it was in.
It's a good gig.
Yeah, not bad. It's tough to stay in shape, I feel like.
Depends on what kind of chip.
Yeah.
Could be pop chips.
It's okay.
What's a pop chip?
That's another segment.
What's going on? And he went and played in Canada. He's kind of bounced around and really got his opportunity because Jonathan Abram got injured this year and has taken full advantage of it. And I think the secondary has just been much, much better when he's on the field. So a great story and just an awesome guy, too. I've really come to lean on him a lot for things in the locker room. When I'm doing a story about anybody else, go talk to him about them, and he's always got a lot of great insight.
The other story of the game was the defensive line. Max Crosby had a really good game. From a number standpoint, Cleveland Furl finally put some sacks up on the board.
Yeah.
What were they talking about after the game about his performance?
I think a lot of it was finally, you know, the stats show up, because a lot of guys have been defending him and saying he's playing better than numbers would suggest. Now, I would certainly argue yesterday Max Crosby had a better game than Cleveland Ferrell.
Really?
He made a lot of plays. Also, if you look at pressures, he pressured Rivers, and I thought the pressure was even bigger than the sacks, because he was so jittery in the pocket all the time because he was getting so much pressure. Max Crosby got 10 pressures yesterday.
Wow.
Ferrell got 5. He just happened to get home 2.5, you know, half of those times, got 2.5 sacks. But Crosby had 10 quarterback pressures yesterday. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And they were actually putting the running back to his side to chip him.
They had to, really. I thought that they did really well in terms of just pressuring him consistently, even when they weren't sacking him. And they got to him 5 times, but even when they weren't sacking him, they were getting to him. They were really throwing him off his game.
This week, if you can dig it up, I don't know if Pro Football Focus does that win rate thing for guys outside of the first round, because we talked about they had a ranking of all the first rounders and their win rates and the pass rush, and, like, you know, Nick Bosa was winning like freaking 27%, and Ferrell was the worst edge rusher in the first round, down at about 7%. Obviously, his number got better yesterday. So, I mean, much maligned guy. I wonder if he's been hearing any of that. So what did he have to say after the game? Did he come out and go, you know what? Up yours. I'm here, baby.
He had nothing to say.
Wait, what happened?
A group of about 25 reporters, myself included,
really,
walked over to his locker. We're waiting for him. And he always waits till the end to talk. He will make you wait till the very end of availability to talk, whether it's practice, game, anything. That's disconsistent with him. But he was waiting, and there was, like I said, 25 reporters and cameras, and, you know, everybody huddled around him. And he was standing there kind of adjusting his clothes. He was fixing the belt, you know, changed his socks a couple times, pulled them up, and then he started arranging all of his toiletries in his locker.
So you're really watching this, like, hey, when's he coming over?
We are all
standing there. He has his back turned?
Yeah. And he's there, and I was like, okay, it's fine. He can do what he wants to do. He always waits till the end. And then he turns around finally after, I think this went 5 to 7 minutes.
Wow.
And he turns around and he goes, all right, you guys have one question. Who's got it? And everybody laughed, and they thought he was joking. And somebody said, hey, you know, coach has been talking about, you've been playing really well even though you don't have the sacks. How did it feel to get those 2.5 sacks and to finally, you know, have that kind of breakout game? And he said, just care that we won. That was all for Raider Nation. See y'all.
All right, so what's the deal? What do you think?
I think he was saying
he has been hearing it.
Yeah, I think he was saying, I know what you guys have been saying about me. You're not going to get anything from me now that I played well.
All right. Mark McMillan, former NFL player, along with Cofield and Adam Hill. Golden Nugget is the site. Let's get another expert on this and talk some Raiders football here with Rod Woodson. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. What's going on there, fellas?
We're just breaking down our Raiders, as we're starting to say here in Las Vegas. I know that's obnoxious, but last night, a massive win. So what do you think was the biggest thing out of the game? What was your big narrative out of the game of the Raiders' win?
Well, you know, first of all, anytime you can win a division opponent, beat a division opponent, especially being the last primetime game, if there's no playoff games there, last primetime game in Oakland, it was a big win. I think what it does for the Mass is that now they're 5-4. Their next two games against the Bengals and the Jets. So you got to think they're going to be 7-4 after those two games. But you can't look ahead, so they understand that. And then they play Kansas City. So, but they put themselves, and the way they played a lot better than what people thought they were going to play this year. And it starts with the running game. The running game is outstanding. Listen, that last 18-yard run for a touchdown that Josh Jacobs had, he comes running in. He was on the sideline. He comes running in. Everybody in the stand, including the Chargers, knew what was going to happen, and they couldn't stop it. And that's just an indication of where this Raider team is going. This offense is starting to get there. Derek Carr is taking care of the football. It's a run-first offense. And the defense is starting to play a little bit better down the backstretch. And all they got to do is get, instead of being 32nd in pass defense, get to 25. And if they get to 25, this is going to be a hard team to beat.
So a lot of people thought this was going to be a really down year for the Raiders. I know if you go by the odds makers right now, they'd be 2-7. I've picked them to win exactly one of their 9 games so far, and they're 5-4. So where is it that we were wrong? What have they done that has exceeded expectations?
Well, Derek is taking care of the football. That's the first thing. You know, last year he had double digit picks. This year he only has three or four, whatever it is. Yes, you know, he's taking care of the football. But I think the difference is if you go back to last year, so last year he's learned a new system. And if anybody knows John Gruden, John, you know that system is, it's like a thesis. You know, one play is like 25 sentences. He had to learn that. And he had to learn it, try to figure out what John wanted, how he wanted to please John, because I think Derek Carr is one of those guys who wants to please his coaches. And then around week 7, week 8, week 9, he started playing really good football. And that's what you were looking for. And now he stayed with that this year. He's not putting the ball in harm's way. It is a run-first football team. And I think bringing Mike Mayock in, they brought some culture, meaning there's some discipline in that building. And that's going to trickle down to the field. And anytime you have some discipline in the building, they understand what the structure now, and everybody's playing better with that. The defense is getting better. They got some pass rushers. They haven't played great, but they stopped the run. They struggled a little bit last night. But if the back end, if that secondary and the linebackers in coverage can keep getting better as the season goes on, they're going to be a hard out. I think for them, they, you know, and all players understand, they don't listen to outside noise. Outside noise is what it is. I didn't think they were going to be this good either. I thought they were going to win maybe 6 games this year. You know, and if they went to 500, that's even better. But they're playing a lot better than what people thought they were going to play. And it's an indication of how good the young players are playing in their rookies and in their second years.
What does that do for a team when, you know, we talked about a lot of the rookies and how they were building for the future. They got much younger this year. Last year they were one of the oldest teams in the league. This year they made a conscious decision to get younger. A lot of rookies were going to contribute and play. And I think a lot of people thought, okay, well, that means you're playing for the future. But all of a sudden these rookies are really good. I mean, what does that do for a franchise to you know, energize things when you have rookies that are performing at this high of a level?
Well, I mean, it's a good thing. But just because you perform at a high level 1 year doesn't mean you're going to do it the second year. Right. So that's the hardest thing about the National Football League, being consistently good for stretches, for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years. That makes teams good. And, you know, I think they're heading the right direction, though. So, you know, they got to add a couple more pieces to it. They get a couple more veterans. The younger players keep getting better as they play. And then when they get to Vegas, you know, the old Raiders will be back.
This is McMillan, man. First of all, you know, I always got to give homage to my guys that played in the backfield on a successful career. I know when we played against each other, we used to draw at each other and talk trash, but now we're on the other side of the mic now. We're talking about the Raiders, and we talk about their secondary, and a lot of guys are continuing to get hurt, and, you know, we mentioned about their young rookies, and we were all rookies at one point, and, you know, from the outside coming in, a lot of people's like, well, can this guy step up? Can he do it? You know, when you're in the National Football League, can you go back and, you know, obviously when you got your first opportunity to get in the game, what was your mindset as you became, you know, one of the best to ever do it when you're a rookie?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, listen, when you're a rookie, you're still trying to figure it out. You know, one of my coaches told me before, hey, you don't know what you don't know. You're still learning. You're still developing what you can and can't do in the National Football League. It's different than all the other leagues that these rookies have ever played in. And even when I became a rookie, that I ever played in, you know, the speed was a lot. The receivers were a lot quicker. Some were bigger. Some were a lot faster. So, you know, you learn from mistakes. You just can't be a repeat performer with those mistakes. And if you learn from them and you adapt to them and you have that in-game experience where you have that recall, okay, hey, listen, this formation, they ran this against me. This time they're going to run it again. So if they come to the same formation, you got to believe it. So the young guys are getting better. You know, if you look at Mullen last night played a solid game for the Oakland Raiders. And Worley is still getting better. So, you know, the safeties played outstanding last night for him. Carl Joseph got another interception.
Right.
Eric Harris comes in and gets two. I mean, they had 5 picks. They only got 3. They had 5 picks throughout the night.
Right.
And, you know, Eric Harris did a tremendous job. Carl Joseph is still growing in what he's doing. You know, Joyner, he came in. I didn't think he could play nickel at that high of a level, but he's done a solid job at the nickel position for the Raiders. So I think this young group is still growing. They're going to learn by their mistakes. Hey, when I first came in, it was like bombs over Baghdad.
Yeah.
I mean, we were getting bombed. We were getting toasted. But we learned.
Right.
And then the second year came, we got a little bit better. The third year came. That's when everything started clicking for us. And that's when we started becoming a little more of a dominant defense. And I would think the same thing is going to happen with them. You see the play is getting a little bit better as the year goes on. And then you would think by the time the end of the year, they're going to be playing better. And next year, you would hope that they're still trending in the upward direction. And that when you do that, that's when the defense starts getting better. It takes the pressure off the offense. Now they start winning 13 to 10 games. Instead of all the games have to be in their 20s and their 30-point range.
It's the voice of Rod Woodson, Hall of Famer Rod Woodson. I think the other thing we got to mention, yeah, they're 5-4. It's not this unreal record, but the job that John Gruden has done from a dealing with distractions and injury standpoint is amazing. I don't think we've seen anything like Antonio Brown right before the season. That changed their whole outlook at receiver and tight end, and then obviously the 48-day road trip and offensive line issues. John Gruden has held this thing together so well.
I mean, some of the issues he caused himself, bringing AB over, yes, that's his fault. I mean, he wanted a stud receiver, and he got a headache. Receivers like that aren't moved and let go. Yeah, he definitely did. I mean, but those guys aren't moved from a team because they're doing everything the right way. You know, they're removed from the team and they're let go because they're causing too much drama in the locker room. And you know this, that if the locker room is split and somebody is allowed to do a certain thing, it's going to trickle to everybody else. And that's one thing that the Steelers understood, and they started realizing that how talented he is, they're better off without him. And then the Raiders figured that out. The Raiders figured, hey, man, you are talented. When you play, you ball out. But we don't need this headache.
Now
one of the most talented receivers to play in the last 10 years, not even in the NFL.
I think we had Leroy Irvin on a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about the locker room. Obviously, you know, you're a Pittsburgh Steelers through and through. If you were in the locker room with A.B., what would be some of the things that you would have said to him? You know, obviously back in the day, you know, he probably would have got punched in the face.
He would have got whooped. He would have got a two-piece and a biscuit.
That's better than that Popeye's chicken sandwich, though.
That's the way we handled it back then, right? So every team, and really when you start looking at the landscape of the National Football League, all the really good teams, they have leaders, and the leaders can't be the head coach. The leaders can't be the position coaches. The leaders have to be the players who take it upon themselves to take ownership of the team. And then they control that team in the locker room. So if somebody does something sideways, you got to come up to them and say, hey, man, you can't do that. You causing the distraction for the team. We're trying to win. And then if he does it again,
then you bring out the two-piece.
Three to four of the guys were coming out to talk to him. So, you know, it's changed a little bit because we don't have those veteran players throughout the locker room, throughout the National Football League. It's a younger league. So you're going to have, third-year players are considered veterans now. Where when I came in the league, third-year player, he was still a baby.
So, Rod, what's realistic for the Raiders now? I mean, obviously the goals have changed here. They're 5-4. They got a couple of easier games coming up with the Jets and the Bengals. Are we getting crazy if we say, hey, they should go 9-7? Maybe they can go 10-6?
I mean, you got the Bengals, you got the Jets, they got KC. I don't know the exact order. I think they got Tennessee, they got Jacksonville.
Yeah, they got Tennessee.
They got the Chargers again.
Yep, and Broncos.
And the Broncos. There's no give. There's no instant wins in the National Football League. You have to go out there and play your good football. But I'm looking at it. Look, the next 2 weeks, I'm thinking they're going to win. So they're going to be 7-4. They got 5 games left. They win 3 of those games here in the postseason. They're making it. 10-6 is going to make it. And they might get the first wild card spot, they might get the last wild card spot, but they're going to get in. So if you're 10-6, they played a lot better than what anybody in this world thought they were going to play. Yeah. Maybe even John Gruden. John can say maybe he'll come out to publicly and say we knew we could do this. He's lying.
Yeah.
Nobody
yeah,
thought well, they could be 10-6. But if they make it to that point, they're into the postseason, which is a great possibility.
Hell of a story. Rod, we appreciate a couple minutes on late notice on a Friday. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, fellas. Enjoy.
There you go. Rod Woodson, former Raider, last couple of years of his career, 17 years in the National Football League.
He's like a pioneer in the league.
It's crazy. we'll comment on some of the things he talked about, a little more on the Raiders and their record right now. We got to get to grilling with McMillan, which, by the way, speaking of that, we got the Cadillac Mexican Kitchen right across the way. Happy hour starts up here in about 12 minutes.
We got no nachos?
You've got to order them, man. $4 on the domestic craft beer. You got craft for $5. You got specialty drinks all under $6. You can get the happy hour menu. The Cadillac Chip and Dips is on special. Chicken or pork quesadillas. Mm. Cantina beef nachos.
Mm.
Okay. I was waiting. Ahi tuna tacos. Street tacos. It's all here at the Cadillac Mexican Kitchen right inside the Golden Nugget. Come down and see us. Up next, a little grilling with McMillan, and then we're going to do some UNLV basketball preview for the game tomorrow with former Runnant Rebel Curtis Terry.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.
Back from the East Coast trip, got a chance to see the birds win. Try to put a little bird on the grill. You see those little smoked wings right there. We got a little tasty jalapeno popper stuffed with cream cheese and bacon. Holla back at your boy, Grillin' McMillan. Ooh-wee!
Now, back to the Golden Nugget Las Vegas for Football Friday on Cofield and Company.
Doing better with the food porn than our own Mark McMillan. Time for a little grilling with McMillan. All right, is the barbecue menu all set for tomorrow? Biggest game of the year, LSU and Alabama. You usually do it up big. In fact, sometimes you do it up so big, you got to start the day before.
Did you see? I sent out a tweet earlier. Before I left, I put the ribs on before I even left. Sprayed them down, got the temperature all nice and warm and fuzzy inside. So it's about 275.
You don't need to monitor that?
No. I monitor the smoke and the heat from inside.
That's okay. The whole point. You're not supposed to touch it forever. People who keep opening the freaking
You don't want to let the heat out. So right now, those ribs right now are just smoking. That was some mesquite wood as that. No charcoal, no lighter fluid, straight
no
wood.
No lighter fluid.
Straight wood.
Okay. How long?
They're going to be on for about 6 hours.
Okay.
So by tomorrow, game day, they're going to be ready. You're going to be fall off the bone.
So then what do you do tonight? So you take them out. They're going to be done tonight at what, like 8, 9?
They'll be – no. I put them on about 1 o'clock.
Okay. So when you get back home?
So when I get back home, I'll just throw a little sauce on them, put them back on the grill, charred a little bit.
Are you going to have them tonight?
No. I'm having them tomorrow. I'm just preparing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you prep it tonight.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow, what do you do?
No. The ribs are on the grill already right now.
Yeah.
So by tonight, you just, put them in foil. Just let them marinate a little bit in the oven. Gets a little bit more tender. And then tomorrow, you just break it on out. Feed them to the tigers.
I couldn't even start the grill. Like when you're saying you start the fire, I'm like, start a fire? How do you even do that?
When we do the Grillin' McMillan segment, I just cringe with my man over here to the left. Because he has, like, no clue on the grill and the stove.
Zero.
But I'll throw some tri-tip on there tomorrow.
Oh, I love tri-tip.
So I'll throw some tri-tip because that don't take as long as the ribs. So I want the ribs to be nice and tender, fall off the bone. I want to just sit back and watch my Bama boys beat the brakes off of LSU tomorrow.
Will the food taste as good if LSU wins?
Oh, the food's always going to taste good.
Okay.
Win or lose, Bama win or lose, Eagles win or lose, Kansas City win or lose, the barbecue is always going to be special. You got to come get your rib, big boy.
Well, but you can't. I feel like also you can't have multiple – just because you played for multiple teams, you got to pick one.
No, I can't do that because they all help me in the position that I am today.
they're all paying for some of that food.
They're all paying for some of that food either way, man. So I got to give homage to the teams that, gave me a living.
Fair.
It was a good living. So I just can't say, you know, even the Saints, we suck, but, you know, the checks were still cashing.
Made money.
Yeah.
All right, we got to play a couple of spots here of awesome or gross. Adam, did you see this video? And Mark's watching it right now. This video of these Montreal Canadian fans, right? Did you see this?
Oh, yeah, I saw it.
The woman, the guy's got fries. The woman's got a spoon in her hand. They're at a game. She appears to just have a giant tub of Hellman's mayonnaise. Or is there something else in there? Do we get an answer to this? Are they? Is he just dipping his fries in mayonnaise? She appears to just be scooping mayonnaise and eating it.
Yeah.
What's in there?
I have to hope that this is some kind of a ruse and there's just like a ranch in there or something.
That's gross.
It's disgusting.
Who would just eat ranch?
Gross. That's gross. They're in Canada?
I don't know. They're Canadians. They're Montreal Canadian
fans. Well, yeah. Maybe that's something. Maybe that's something Canadians do.
Is it like a giant thing of poutine?
You never know.
Thank you for saying that's something Canadians do, because I was on Twitter and somebody was like, "Man, y'all white people are crazy." I was like,
"Oh no,
no
they didn't.
Not
the
white people. Not white people. Those people. Not us. Not all of us. We don't do that."
That's like people saying like all black people eat fried chicken.
Well,
all black people don't eat fried chicken. You got vegan brothers now.
That's true.
You got brothers talking about I'm vegan.
But I mean, we do get unfairly cast as, and I say we as in the whites, as people that like mayonnaise. First of all, I hate mayonnaise.
I hate mayonnaise.
It's disgusting. Yep. Why is that a white thing?
I don't like ranch either.
Because it's white.
I guess so.
That's what I'm thinking. I don't know.
It's so messed up.
I like mayonnaise. And I'm a brown brother.
But you wouldn't put French fries in the mayonnaise.
No, that's nasty.
You wouldn't have a tub of mayonnaise in your lap at a hockey game.
No, that's gross. I'm gonna have a tub of popcorn in my lap, but not a tub of mayonnaise.
That's why I feel like there's something wrong with the video. Like, first of all, what arena lets you just carry in a big jug of mayonnaise?
All right, here's the next one. Awesome or gross. I watched the construction of this turkey. This is a recipe, I guess it's popped up the last couple of years. It's a flaming hot Cheetos turkey.
Oh, I saw that.
But what you do, as you first of all, you brine it. You know, you gotta give it like 2 or 3 hours to marinate. You pull it out. Then they take like a giant block of cheddar cheese and put it in. Then obviously you bread it with the flaming Cheetos. You know, when it came out, it kind of looked good. Now it was a little too cheesy. Oh. It looked good.
Oh. That bird died for that. You know, if you're gonna get a turkey, if you're gonna risk his life and run around gobble gobble, at least dress my bird up. Put some, you know, put some stuffing in him. Put some vegetables in him. Baste him with a little butter on top.
They had potatoes on the side. What more do you want?
They shoved a block of cheese in there.
It was a whole block of cheese, yeah.
That's nasty.
It was a 2-pound block of cheese.
And that looked like the government cheese that you used to get back in the day on your front doorstep.
A little Velveeta.
Velveeta's nasty, too.
That's gross, man.
I'm probably out on that. Just because I think if you go regular Cheetos, you're all right.
Can you even eat Flamin'
Cheetos? No, that's what I'm saying. They're too spicy for me.
Yeah, I can't do that. Very delicate palate across the way.
Yeah, for sure.
That's why he's withering away now.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Can't have anything spicy.
You eat some spicy, you eat some Cheetos like that, you better have some baby wipes on hand. You got to have some baby wipes on hand. If you eat that turkey, you better have some baby wipes on hand.
4 o'clock hours on the way. We're going to talk a little UNLV basketball with Curtis Terry and then get into the college football news, LSU, Alabama. And we could be witnessing the possibility of the best player in college football never playing college football again.
Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas.